your source for Big Ten talk. It's Off Tackle Empire.
Welcome to Big Ten Kickoff Week here on Off Tackle Empire, your coming out of dormancy source for all things Big Ten.
Hold on. We are going to need to take a break to reset and chart our path forward. So we're actually going to quit here 3 days before the season starts.
And this decision will not be revisited for at least a week.
Yeah, so what we're referring to there, of course, is news that broke actually just a couple hours ago as we're recording here, where on the thrice eve of the football season,
the three
finally commencing, Penn State basketball coach Pat Chambers takes this opportunity to pack his shit and leave. After the result of a months-long internal investigation following some allegations of extremely insensitive, racially tinged comments by former guard Rasir Bolton, who's now transferred to Iowa State. Everybody transfers to Iowa State, but this was for a different reason than usual. Pat Chambers resigns.
What my understanding was that the thing I saw before I saw that he resigned was that, you know, there were reports that like there's going to be a more comprehensive report released that details as yet unreported claims about the environment that Pat Chambers created. So I guess it's a thing where he realizes that it's not going to be a tenable situation once the entire report comes out.
Apparently not. And his comments make it seem as though he does intend to coach again, because he mentions he's making plans for the next 20 years. He's been coaching for about that long. So plainly he intends to coach again, obviously somewhere else. What I guess I'm wondering is if you're at some point in the future, and certainly no one's going to hire him without knowing the details of this report. What exactly did you say to who, how often? But without us knowing any of that, if I'm an administrator interviewing Pat Chambers in the context of taking over my basketball team, which, by the way, after last season, he might have been a candidate that our teams look to hire away to more attractive jobs.
Absolutely. We've been... I was explaining kind of the situation to my wife, you know, not that she wouldn't know a Penn State basketball coach, right, but she wouldn't necessarily know the guy's name off the top of her head. But I said that it was a guy that we'd praised effusively for elevating Penn State to a level I don't think Penn State themselves even realized that they were at. I mean, nobody showed up to the games. I mean, they never seemed to support him institutionally. And yet, in spite of all this, he produced what was really, I mean, they were going to definitely be a tournament team.
For the first time in almost a decade, and as I'm reading this sort of summary article here, for only the fifth time since 1965, they would have been an NCAA tournament team.
And they would have been set up to compete in the future, too.
Yeah, there were certainly some questions there, and we do have our basketball previews on the way, so we'll talk a little bit more about that when the time comes. But although they had plenty of questions, it was for the first time in a long time easy to kind of look on the bright side of those uncertainties with Penn State basketball. Now, if I'm going back to interviewing Pat Chambers here as an athletic director contemplating hiring him, the first thing I have to ask is, all right, so the reports first break, let me see here, in July, that feels like it was 10 years ago, but of course, we are in 2020 time, so these reports surface about...
So that was what, around like March 127th this year? Around March 127th, 128th?
Yeah, it was in the year 1048 COVID, so around 3 months ago in real time, this story with Bolton breaks. It honestly kind of came and went, and we commented on this at the time when we were talking about Penn State in our review/preview series, that it kind of seemed like apparently this isn't a big deal to anyone.
Well, not to mention, what a great time to air your program's dirty laundry.
For sure. And I think this might have been when we expressed the opinion, if you got secrets or bad stuff you want to get out, now is the time. Throw it all out in the street. Because this is when nobody... You could yell the loudest, dirtiest cuss word into CNN's hot mic, and it's not going to be news for about 10 seconds.
All five of the senators that were accused of insider trading on COVID information are still in office. And the one used those profits to fund her re-election campaign.
And she's probably going
to
win.
And she's favored to win right now. So not only because you'll be ignored, but because even when people do pay attention to you, they're just not going to have the energy to fight you anymore.
Yep. So 3 months ago, this story breaks. Pat Chambers does not resign at that time. Although presumably, like, if anyone knows what this investigation is going to dig up, it's him. He's the one who said and did all these things. Yeah. What that makes me think is, did he think that he'd be able to, that maybe they wouldn't find all this stuff and that he'd be able to hang on to this job, and that's why he stayed? Because,
or that maybe he, you know, maybe he could kind of pull some levers internally and be like, hey, look, so now this has come out, and here's, you know, here's the situation now. So, like, all right, look, I'm sorry that this happened. I'm sorry that this one thing happened this one time. So, you know, the damage is done, and we're just scratching at old wounds here by continuing to dig further into this. So, you know, let's just all move on with our lives, and just, I'm very sorry, and this won't happen again. Trying to, you know, maybe halt this internal investigation. And what's weird is we've been talking about this for, I mean, about as long as Penn State has been performing well on the podcast, that it seems that the university has just been fading Pat Chambers, right? Like they just always refused to really kind of get behind him, and it always seemed like his success there was kind of on accident or despite the administration rather than because of it. And we always wondered why that was. And I guess maybe they knew there was a bit of a volatility that they were taking on, a bit of a risk here.
It's possible. I mean, they're the ones who spend more time with him than we do.
That's not to say that, like, you know, they knew that bad things were happening, but that, like, they maybe knew it was possible. I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out some explanation.
Yeah, that could be it, because it's not in the article I'm looking at now, but I think somewhere I read that he was going in, that there were only 2 years left on his contract, which is very unusual for a reasonably successful basketball or football coach.
Okay, because if you're in his ninth year, was he in?
I believe
eighth or
so.
Ninth?
Eighth,
I mean, yeah, for a guy to be that long so tenured,
he'd been extended once, but normally you keep a guy extended basically on a rolling basis, because if his contract is shortening, then it gets used against him in recruiting, or at least that's what we always hear. So the coaches' agents tell us.
Yeah.
Kind of maybe another piece of evidence that even if they didn't know what this report was going to say or the full details of all this stuff, that maybe the administration had some misgivings to begin with. So obviously this late in the season, you're not going to find a permanent replacement. The only option is to elevate internally, and assistant Jim Ferry will take over. I confess I have never heard of him. Even spending as much time with Big Ten basketball as I do, I won't pretend that I know more than a handful of assistant coaches in the conference. So he gets his audition shot, basically, I believe. And shoot, I'm looking at a different article than I was before, but Penn State had a coach resign in the mid-90s. They elevated an assistant and then ended up hiring him on a permanent basis. Now, you can infer from how Penn State's basketball history has gone that that wasn't a wild success, but it's not unprecedented for a guy to step up in kind of difficult last-second contingency circumstances.
Yeah, at the same time,
and earn the job for
the fact that you have that neither you nor I have any idea who that interim guy was that took over on a full-time basis leads you to believe that he certainly wasn't bad enough to have any infamy among Penn State fans.
Sure, that's true. That's true. But again, infamy among Penn State fans in the context of a basketball coach takes some doing. So anyway, I think that's about all there is to say about it. One would assume that an assistant is going to run a pretty similar system to what Chambers ran. We'll hopefully have some more details about that closer to the basketball season starting, which is, by the way, barely a month from today.
Yeah. So what? This was a Mr. Ferry. Was in fact a head coach at Duquesne.
Okay,
am I seeing that right?
Yeah, that's
okay. So he coached in downtown Pittsburgh there.
Oh, geez.
No, I'm not. That's not really an accent I can do all that well. But I am going there for Thanksgiving, and while I'm there, I do intend to go to the Cathedral of Learning, so I can see if they still have that amazing video of the elevator narrated by Dave Wannstedt in the most Pittsburgh voice that he can possibly muster, because I didn't record it. I haven't seen it on YouTube. And, after the live recording, I talked to the Shutdown Fullcast people about that, and they said that, like, oh my God, they need to get their hands on it. So I'll do my best if it's still floating around downtown. We'll see.
Head down there for about an hour. Okay, so let's get into our scheduled programming then, which is that we have Big Ten football to talk about here today in this present timeline and the reality that we're living. We are 2 days, almost to the minute, away from, is it 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock Eastern kickoff? I don't know, on Friday.
I have no idea.
Oh, don't pretend like you don't have the countdown ticking in your head. I know you're looking forward to this, even if it's only to be disappointed very quickly after kickoff.
Well, see, I don't know because most of the Illinois sources that I look at for game stuff would naturally be in Central Time.
Okay, it's 8 o'clock Eastern. So.
Okay, 8 o'clock Eastern. That's kind of what I thought, but I wasn't
2 days
sure. I know it was either 7 or 8, but I'm not entirely certain. Well, that does give me an opportunity to raise up a glass of our Win Fight Tribe Brewster of the Week, which is in this case, it's a Black Box Shiraz. I don't know what in the hell's in there, and at this point, I don't care.
So that's a Win Fight Try wine of the week?
Basically, yeah.
That's where we are, guys.
It's Black Box, Big Ten 2020. I'm not sure what in the hell is in here. At this point, I don't think I care.
Yeah, it honestly.
I'm going to drink it. I'm going to be modestly excited about it, but I'm not going to go into it with any expectations either.
I have to admit, I'm mildly anticipating a more exciting than usual season in one sense, which is that if the football we've seen played elsewhere in the country is any indication, there are going to be a lot of turnovers and a lot of like defensive mistakes, like missed tackles and also just busted coverage. And again, maybe part of that is just the fact that relative to my normal consumption proportions, there's been a lot more like FCS and Group of Five games that I've watched. So it's a lower quality of product a
but
lot of time anyway.
Also, Texas's games against Texas Tech and Oklahoma.
Good grief. I mean,
awful. And just awful. Very fun to watch, but awful.
And let's keep in mind,
Oklahoma basically let Sam Ellinger rush for 4 touchdowns in the fourth quarter because they just decided that they weren't in good enough shape to keep pressuring him.
Well, and they don't have any linebackers who can tackle. They only have linebackers who could tackle a strong but not exactly fleet of foot running quarterback. Like, yeah. Grant, like,
there was much confusion, basically, is what occurred.
Yeah. And the other thing that we got to keep in mind here is, you know, contemplate the state of quarterback play in the conference right now before we talk about Illinois, Wisconsin in particular. So you've got Justin Fields, who's great, Tanner Morgan, Sean Clifford, very, very good. And then.
Well, you got Michael Penix.
Yeah. Penix, Brandon Peters. Those guys are probably kind of your next tier.
Well, again, and then depends. I guess I'm personally weighting Brandon Peters' performance in the later games of the year much more strongly. And I think there's an argument that it's fair for me to do that because
sure.
That reflects his experience with the offense and how comfortable he was in taking the role as you gotta run the option sometimes, Brandon.
Or, well, you all know. Right, so let's conceive of it this way, though, which is that despite your reservations, is there not a very good argument to be made that Brandon Peters is the fifth best quarterback in the conference after the other guys we just listed?
You could absolutely argue that. Again, he didn't put up... There was really no game where he put up eye-popping stats outside of Michigan State, which were largely the result of that whole, hey,
ball.
Let's
yeah.
roll him out to the right and throw back across the field to Amadou Bebe so that they can't triple cover him.
Yeah.
That's what they were doing in the second half. But he didn't put eye-popping numbers, but he was making plays to... He got good at making the play that kept the drive alive, which had been a real problem with Illinois earlier in the season. So he got better at, you know, basically just keeping the offense on the field.
Here's my point. Don't expect a polished product right out of the gate, or maybe at all, because the other thing to keep in mind here is no non-conference games against cupcakes to tune up and get your rhythm right, and no games in good weather. We're playing our first games
in October,
the last week of October, and we'll get into that in a little bit.
Well, I mean, October west of Lake Michigan is what we're talking about.
Yeah, the game between Michigan and Minnesota. This, you know, let's skip ahead to Michigan and Minnesota since we talked about the weather. So Michigan and Minnesota are forecast to play under a winter storm warning now, I believe.
Oh my goodness!
and again, that's the first game of the season. Minnesota has an unspecified number of unspecified players missing, such that PJ Fleck was basically fading his own team before the game. Not his style, by the way.
No.
To be pessimistic about anything, even if it's totally justified pessimism. And so you've got that. Although Minnesota did have the good fortune in the offseason of Rashad Bateman returning from opt-out. They were going to have some defensive questions as it was, and Michigan has certainly had probably two of the bigger losses to COVID, not named Micah Parsons, in the conference. In that, I mean, not, I say losses to COVID. That's a terrible way to put it. Losses to opt out. Good. Yes. Nobody's died that I'm talking about. Okay. So let me make that clear. Jeez. So they do lose Nico Collins and Ambry Thomas to opt out / NFL draft. Those guys both left and did not return. They were fortunate to get Jalen Mayfield opting to come back. Otherwise, that's probably their three best players from last year who would all have been gone and unavailable to them. And they also have a ton of turnover on defense. So we've got game day is going to this game. So night game, Minnesota. The high I checked earlier this week, I think, is like 29 or 30 degrees for that day. Boy.
That's the thing. We're actually, for those of us that don't know, we're pretty insulated in Metro Detroit from a lot of the really bad weather that y'all get, because Lake Michigan breaks that stuff up for us.
Yeah, it's a sheet. So there's a lot of snow on the westernmost parts of the mitten because you get lake effect. But then after that, the lake just acts as a basically a weather dampener. It doesn't get as cold or as windy, and generally not as snowy as it does most other parts of this latitude. So
on the other hand, and you're in Madison, there's just nothing but plains for 1,000 miles to the west of you. So that's where our season's going to be starting. And I don't want to spend too long backtracking there, but we never got a take on Illinois Wisconsin, and mine is that
we'll jump around. I mean, like I said,
Jump around.
Yeah, I just brought.
We'll jump around. You sure?
Yeah. Although I don't even know, are they admitting people to the stadium?
No.
Okay.
My understanding is that it's still the same as when the Big Ten announced this season, which is that it will be family and friends only.
Okay, see, I must have missed that. My recollection was the conference was basically going to leave admissions to the individual schools, but they're imposing that on conference slide.
I've heard nothing to the contrary.
Okay. Well, that's good, because you know if they didn't, Nebraska and Iowa would have 90,000 people in their stadiums.
Yeah, absolutely.
So good on the Big Ten, honestly, for seeing that coming and imposing it. But, you know, so I don't think that either of us pretend to know what's going to come from Michigan versus Minnesota on the field. Because, look, Minnesota, again, is going to have an unknown number of players we don't know apparently out because of COVID concerns.
Running the ball is going to be very important in this game. I'm not quite sure why. I can't really put my finger on it, but not being able to put your finger on it is kind of what we're talking about here, isn't it?
Right. And if that's the case, then you have to favor the home team here, because whereas Michigan has one offensive lineman back from a good line last year, Minnesota has all of them. Back from a very good offensive line. And it's true that they lose Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks, but Mo Ibrahim has proven perfectly capable. Bryce Williams has shown a little bit as well. So PJ Fleck will be looking for a third guy, because his saying is they need two and a spare. Having Rashad Bateman back allows all their other receivers to slot down into roles that they're probably better suited for at this point.
And boy, you know, this has got to be a disconcerting diagnosis for Michigan fans to hear, because if we're in good weather, Minnesota's passing game is much better than Michigan's too.
Yeah, well, and that's, look, it really shouldn't be anything surprising to say that Minnesota's offense overall is better, because again, they lose a couple very good skill players, but everybody else is back. Michigan has a ton of turnover. One offensive lineman back, their quarterback's gone, their top two receivers are gone now that Collins is out. Their running back group is going to be really good. So if the offensive line gels, which look, under Ed Warner, it's probably fair to say their offensive line is going to gel much quicker than you'd expect a group of four new guys to do. Hopefully they don't have it together by next week. But they're probably going to be good sooner rather than later. They get Chris Evans back from that year-long academic suspension to go along with Charbonnet and Haskins. Blake Corum is coming in. So they've got a really good group of running backs, at least on paper.
I just can't believe they're actually going to start a Jim Harbaugh prep school recruit at quarterback.
The game has not begun yet.
That is true.
But there's like the only guys mentioned, Joe Milton, the redshirt sophomore, seems to be the guy. He's been tabbed, anointed, compared to Cam Newton by certain elements in the media here. So that's a whole... I mean, look.
My understanding is that Tathan is still out there. Tate Martell?
Is he really? Well, I guess... He hasn't played like anywhere, so maybe he does still have like
eligibility. He left Miami when they brought in Derek King.
Is he just like wandering the lands like a troubadour, or has he landed somewhere else?
I'll tell you what, he should really join up with Central Arkansas if that's his approach, because that's basically what they're doing as a team. They're just wandering the land, challenging people to football duels.
Well, I told you before the games began last weekend that UMass played their only game of the season. Because remember, their attendance was so bad, they got kicked out of the MAC several years ago. So they were living that independent FBS football life for some unknown reason. But then, when all the power conferences they got their check games from canceled their non-conferences, they had not a single game to play until they managed to find one, just a partner for one lonely turn around the dance floor with Georgia Southern.
Sunbelt team.
Yeah, Georgia Southern. A good Sunbelt team.
Yeah, they were a 31-point underdog, and they lost 41-0. So they have now completed their 2020 campaign, scoring no points.
What is the nature of the team meeting after that game to conclude your season, when you've done whatever practices they were allowed to do? You scheduled one opponent in a transparent cash grab. Not that you're playing like an Alabama or USC, you're just playing the only team that would let you come to their building.
Yeah, I mean, I can see how you pitch this, because there's also FCS teams that are doing this to a lesser extent with like the ACC.
Yeah.
Where they had a few games. I can see how you pitch this as a coach is just like, well, here's your chance to like... it's an awkward thing to pitch as a coach, right? Here's your chance to try out for better programs or NFL, which there's not that many people. But like, at a certain point, you're a player in one of these schools. You have to know that you're playing the game to get money for your school's football program. Like, you have to know that. There's just no way you can't, because how can you not question, why are we playing one game against Georgia Southern, and that's our whole season? Like, there's no way that those people didn't all know that.
Look, because of the blanket eligibility exemption or waiver, whatever you want to call it, it's fair to say that what's the harm, you may as well. You don't want to lose an entire year without having anything to show for, because honestly, like sure, these players are probably aware of the transaction. I know, it makes me sick too. These players are probably aware of the transactional nature of how scheduling works, especially in this environment, but they are also still football players. As we have discussed before, the mania of football players who get to this level is truly without bound. So the opportunity to go out there and get your faces caved in by 40 points by a Sunbelt team, boy, it takes a certain... Is that not greater commitment than anybody from Clemson or Ohio State will ever show this year? Is that not dedication and adversity, real adversity, which we'll talk about Iowa pretty soon. But boy.
Yeah, that's something that's just unknown to a lot of the players at the perennially relevant schools who've come there from the prep school route.
Yeah. So anyway, that's about all we have to say about Michigan and Minnesota. As you can tell, we're kind of reaching here, but let's backtrack in time then, because I did drag us out of order, but we mentioned the weather and I didn't want to forget that point. So back to Friday night, Illinois at Wisconsin. As far as I know regarding COVID developments, Ravon Bonner is the only opt-out that I could find reference to. Maybe my information is not today, but I looked, I tried to find, and the only information I could find is that it does not seem that Wisconsin has any COVID opt-outs, and it looks like Illinois just had the one.
Yeah. Now, of course, we did have somebody leave the team on August 2nd to go play for another school because, you know, we're out here just losing dudes to, like, conventional reasons this late in the offseason. But still, yeah, that was unfortunate, because that guy was going to start. I can tell you that Trayshawn Smith was going to start, because suddenly they're saying, oh, Tony Adams needs to move back to safety. Well, he wouldn't have needed to move back to safety if a starter hadn't suddenly decided that he wasn't going to be there anymore. So that's kind of annoying. But anyway, you've got, I mean, if Wisconsin comes out and tries to do the exact same things on offense that they did last year, then you gotta figure that a coaching shakeup is pretty imminent immediately after the game, unless they win 83-0.
Sure, and yeah, look, it's fair to say, as we noted on multiple points last year, that Illinois' defense is keyed to stop the typical Wisconsin offense. A complication here for the Badgers is that projected probable starting quarterback Jack Cohn is not available. He suffered, I think, a foot injury in practice. It didn't sound as though it was going to keep him out for all that long, but the Graham Mertz era is apparently about to begin in Madison. The much ballyhooed prospect, their best quarterback recruit ever. I say recruit because I don't think Russell Wilson is really a recruit in this sense. So we'll see what the offense looks like.
Yeah, congratulations. You recruited an NFL quarterback from a noted NFL quarterback factory in NC State.
Right. And so we'll see what Wisconsin's offense looks like, not only without Cohn, but without Jonathan Taylor. And look, we always assume Wisconsin's going to replace him, but we don't know exactly with who yet or in what proportions. They have guys, you know, Nikia Watson, Garrett Groshek, and the incoming freshman Jalen Berger, who is a four-star prospect from New Jersey. Not that Wisconsin's ever had success with those before.
Well, what concerns me is if they buy into the hype of what Jonathan Taylor leaving means and just decide to pass more. That concerns me way more than if they just Wisconsin, because we're going to be good if they we're going to be in the game as long as they continue to try to run it into the line, I assume. Not because we're necessarily stout up front, but just because we're going to expect that and know that that's coming. But if they start to attack the middle of the field deep with play action, then it's going to get ugly in a hurry. I don't know that our offense can, the Illini offense can keep pace with the...
That's going to be the issue, because Wisconsin defensively is going to be pretty good. They lose a couple of big play linebackers. They always lose a couple of big play linebackers. But their defensive front and their secondary, it's funny because like the way they play, you're not going to know the names of many of those guys because they're not out there getting 10 sacks or a handful of interceptions. But very strong, very experienced, and that means that the guys who do make the plays, which this year is probably going to be Sanborn and Noah Burks, they have the space and opportunity to fly around and make all those sacks, force fumbles, tackles for loss.
So there's a lot of unknowns with the Illini offense, because the only known quantities are the left side of the offensive line, which is rock solid, and Josh Amaterbebe. Brandon Peters, more of a known quantity than not, but you have a running back room where you have Mike Epstein, where his health is just such an unknown because it's been kind of the same injuries he's been dealing with throughout his career. When healthy, he has, you know, really he's a difference-making guy as far as his quickness and ability to make things happen in space, make guys miss, and all that. And he's a pretty good pass blocker. You have Trevon Sidney, the USC slot receiver, who came in as a much-touted prospect, only to be lost for the season a couple games in last year. Not really sure what we're going to see there. You have Luke Ford, who the former top 100 prospect who sat out last season at tight end.
And still have Daniel Barker to go along with him. So.
Right. So there's upside there, but again, you don't know how that's going to play out. So there's Virtus Brown won the right guard position over a multiple-time FCS All-American transfer that we had in Blake Gerasady. I believe that's how they're going to line it up. But these are things that, in theory, you can say, hey, these could be good, but only if all of them hit on the plus side of the uncertainty. Whereas with Wisconsin, there's a bit more of a known quantity. You know the entire offensive line is going to be very good in run blocking, and I mean, you know that the front seven is going to be able to stifle you no matter which way you try to go down the field.
Yeah, so I get that Wisconsin is favored on paper, probably a better team, and they're definitely not going to underestimate Illinois again. I mean, talk about, if you want a game that you're going to put first and just give your coach an opportunity to give you a stern talking to. Not really a motivational message, because it doesn't really seem like Papa Crist's style, but is there any better game you want to get the taste out of your mouth from last year than a rematch with Illinois with your whole offseason to prepare?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like you couldn't have scripted it better if you were writing it out.
Not so fast, my friend, because in the noon slot of the next day, big noon Saturday, Nebraska at Ohio State. You wanted to play. You wanted to play football, Nebraska. Here you go.
Oh,
man. Enjoy.
You know what? This is going to be an amazing dynamic to watch with Ryan Day and Scott Frost, because they've officially entered Tom Izzo, Bruce Weber territory with some of Ryan Day's comments today about how he really got to know Scott Frost better through this and really respects him as a coach, you know, and he'll totally have everybody's back. He really respects how easy his team is to beat by 56 points.
I read this differently than you did. I read this as them becoming Corona denying bros over the summer.
Definitely.
And making plans to build a clubhouse that they would play secret football in and put a sign on the outside of it that said no presidents allowed. So that's how I read that exchange. But you make a fair point. So,
Again, you know, it's a damn shame that we didn't have Tim Beckman in this conference in 2020, because you know damn well that he would have been right there with him.
Oh, jeez.
Who would have? You know, he would have been the biggest advocate. He would have been one of the loudest guys on this side of the aisle.
He would have thrown a Corona party and like gotten his play. Which, by the way, I still think that.
Some Texas players admitted that they did it themselves. Like, Texas players literally did admit that they intentionally got sick with their teammates early.
Okay, so looking at this game, if you squint at it just right, there is a way that this game could be interesting longer than most people think. Nebraska is loaded for bear with offensive weapons. They're sticking with Adrian Martinez at quarterback, and sure, he's been inconsistent, he's been injured, but when he's at his best, he is still capable of putting up big numbers in a big hurry. They figured out their running game at times last season with him and Dedrick Mills and Wandale Robinson, and now they add a big-time outside threat with Omar Manning, literally huge, he's like 6'4", but big-time in terms of big talent, wide receiver in Omar Manning. So the offensive line is a little more seasoned. Brendan Jamies, I'm not sure how to say his name. The left tackle is very well-regarded, possibly an NFL type of pick. There's not really an excuse for this offense not to be consistently great this year. Martinez is in year 3, gotta stop turning the ball over, kid. If you're going to be great, this is the time. And if you're not, they have a guy in Dylan McCaffrey who's now had a little bit of time himself and is presumably going to be breathing down your neck. So,
yeah, this is a thing where, like, if you actually look at it on paper, we were being told fairly late in the year that the offense was still doing growing pains. Well, I mean, at this point, it's put up or shut up time. I mean, there really isn't any reason that if this offense has the upside that everybody's been hearing about, that really, frankly, both of us expected Scott Frost's offense to, based on his work at Oregon and UCF,
yeah,
then you're going to have to start seeing it this year. Otherwise, if not now, when?
No,
he's certainly not going to step up the recruiting without winning more games.
And their recruiting's been fine. It's not, even going back to Mike Riley, it's not like there was nothing here to work with.
There was, you know,
there were weird pieces. It's a very different
gaps you had to fill.
Yeah, it's a different system to be sure.
But those holes are largely patched.
Yeah, and he found the difficult thing right away. He got the quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, he got Adrian Martinez right away. So this should work. Now, that being said, it's understandable that it might not work against Ohio State. But look, defensively for Ohio State, the linebackers are full of veterans, full of former star prospects. It's fair to say, though, that none of those guys has really taken the star turn of like a Raekwon McMillan or a Ryan Shazier, those kind of, like, they haven't had that kind of wrecking ball linebacker, despite having plenty of talent on paper. The defensive line has a lot of turnover, but also a lot of talent. And same thing in the secondary, where you have Sean Wade back. He's a projected first rounder. But other than him, it's all massively inexperienced. Extremely talented. And they're going to be good sooner rather than later. So, of course, my team plays them at the end of the year. But until then, maybe there's an opportunity here to take advantage of some miscues in the secondary. especially because Nebraska's got, I don't know if tricky is the right word, but it's an offense that if you wrong foot something, they're gone. So
you can't afford to be overly aggressive. You want to
right with all the misdirections, the multiple run options. If Scott Frost and his staff are really worth their salt, they're going to find ways to put Ohio State's young defensive backs in conflict and make them think instead of reacting, and they're going to take advantage of that. That's something they've got to do if they want to keep this game close. That's something that a lot of teams are going to have to do to keep it close with Ohio State, though, because in terms of the Buckeye offense, you got to unload a couple thousand rounds at them if you want to match the caliber they're going to be firing at you.
Yeah, because if we're talking about where they're just they execute everything the way that they need it to, but Ohio State is simply too good to allow them even a crack at the end zone, then we're talking about, even if Nebraska's maxed out their offense, then the situation is that we're now the ACC and Ohio State doesn't belong here anymore.
Well, I don't know if I'd say that, because the ACC doesn't have a Penn State.
Unless
you consider Notre Dame to be that. Maybe you could.
Well, only because they keep ducking Clemson.
Well, sure. And I guess, you know, maybe if you want to say, well, Miami's supposed to be good this year, yeah, they're okay. But anyway, I don't know that we're quite at that level. But if there was one benefit to
College
the
Game Day went to how badly did Wake Forest lose when College Game Day was there in Week One?
Like
something horrifying.
40 or 50. Not as horrifying as what they did to Georgia Tech.
Yeah, a Georgia Tech team that had showed some promise, 73-7.
Biggest margin of defeat in an ACC game ever.
Like, just again, this is not like Georgia Tech was god awful 2 years ago, but this was an improved team with some serious talent on offense.
Yeah, they're not that bad. So
have a couple five star skill guys.
To get back to Ohio State, though, if there was a benefit to delaying the season, it was that Ohio State's backfield had more time to get healthy, because they were dealing with injuries to Trey Sermon and Master Teague in the offseason. I believe DeMario McCall transferred, or he might have just been out of eligibility. And so with all those things and J.K. Dobbins gone, they did have a little bit of a question mark at running back.
Well, of course, with
But that's not the issue. That's not the problem anymore, because those guys are healthy now.
Of course, with Trey Sermon there, you have a guy that not only has experience from years in prolific offense at Oklahoma, but also you got to give the guy some football IQ points for knowing exactly when to short Oklahoma stock. I mean, nobody else but him apparently knew that they were going to give up late leads to K-State and Iowa State this year.
Texas, but then somehow managed to win anyway.
Definitely some insider trading went on there. He knew to bail on the Sooners when he did.
Yeah, but so again, and outside of that one question mark, which is now a much smaller question mark, the Buckeye offense is still loaded for bear. They've got the two best interior offensive linemen in the conference, possibly in the country. High quality left tackle, a couple of new guys on the offensive line. But again, you're talking about filling these holes with which of these former five stars is going to win this position battle. Justin Fields, a probable Heisman candidate, although who knows how that works now. And then you've got, even with turnover in the receiving core, veterans in Chris Olave, and now I don't know if you can call Garrett Wilson a veteran. I mean, he's a sophomore who was only kind of used a little bit.
I mean, that's veteran for Ohio State.
Yeah, and intensely talented. So they're going to be just fine. If there's any hope of catching the Buckeyes this year, you've got to be able to outrun them in a track meet, which, man, that's a tall order. But again, there are some possible cracks here. We'll see what it looks like, and maybe all this extra time just makes those younger players shorten their learning curve even more than they're probably going to do already. Maybe it's all futile to begin with, but there's a possibility that they could look mortal these first couple weeks, which, by the way, week two, as far as we're concerned, is Ohio State-Penn State. So, this game will be very interesting, perhaps not necessarily because of the outcome in it. I think most people expect Ohio State to win and win substantially, but are there going to be any visible cracks in the armor for really the fate of the conference the next week?
I mean, I kind of think what we're going to see here is one of these scores that's horrifying and how mundane it is. Just, you wouldn't blink an eye if you saw 56-10.
No.
You'd just be like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Makes sense. Probably the score by the end of the third quarter, and then they throttled it back, yeah.
And then it wouldn't surprise you if Nebraska were to then go on and win five games after that. Like, not to say that they will, but that
data point wouldn't necessarily mean anything about where they're going from there.
Yeah, I mean, it could be Minnesota, and you wouldn't blink an eye.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get this imbalance out of our hands and talk about a couple teams right on the same level with each other. Nice palate cleanser. Rutgers versus Michigan State. Something nice, and you can just fall asleep to it. Okay, so I'm going to start with an uncomfortable admission, which there are a lot more similarities between these teams right now than I might like. Neither team has declared who they're going with at quarterback. Both teams have an established kind of workhorse type running back, Eli Collins and Isaiah Pacheco. So you have something to build around, somebody you can give the ball to 20 times and be like, do something, please. And they also have some real question marks on offense around them. Both teams have a projected starter on the offensive line sitting out for the season. For MSU, that's Jordan Reed. For Rutgers, it's Mike Lonsdorf. Both teams are in their first years under new coaches with kind of, you know, it's not totally clear what's going to happen with their schemes, although there are past data points you can extrapolate from. I do like Michigan State's potential at the skill positions more. I think in the wide receiver and tight end groups, they have guys who have shown a lot more potential. Trey Mosley came on down the stretch last season. Jaden Reed had to sit out, but he was a freshman All-American at Western Michigan. Trenton Gillison was terribly underused by the last staff, but he's not the last physically talented player that you could say that about. Even with all the uncertainty, I believe the last line I saw was something like MSU by 13 or 12 or 10, something in that neighborhood, which feels about right. I would like to believe that there is still that much of a talent differential between the two teams, even with Schiano's efforts to bring in an infusion right away. It's not like, you know, it's not like he did what, you know, for example, what's his face? The guy who screwed the shark.
McElwain.
Yes. I knew it was Mac something. At Colorado State, where he's just grabbing Alabama, like all the SEC transfers that fell out of eligibility. He's like, gimme! And he brought them all in and won, I think won the conference like immediately.
Well, I mean, Schiano also knows where else the bread is buttered, such as going into the backyards of teams that don't bother recruiting, such as Springfield, Illinois, and grabbing a quarterback out of there. So I guess our strategy at Illinois is definitely to do transfers, because it certainly isn't recruiting downstate Illinois, which seems like a weird place to not recruit.
Sure. Well, I mean, you hired that guy from St. Louis. Hopefully that still pays off for you.
Well, all the guys he coached are graduating soon, and we only got like four of them.
Ah, but what if some of them have younger brothers?
That is true.
Then you got a foot in the door.
One of those guys already got kicked out. So.
Sure.
Larry Boyd. Anyway, who's starting at quarterback for the Spartans?
I don't freaking know. They'll probably...
Who would you like to see that's on the roster? Like, you can't... You have to pick somebody that's on the roster to answer that one.
I want to see Peyton Thorne. Let me put it this way. I don't necessarily care who wins the job. I just want to see, I want to know that whoever ends up playing at the end of the season is the best guy on the roster. If whoever they pick day one is good enough that I can be like, yeah, I can live with this, then fine, stick with that guy. I don't think that's going to be the case. So this is one situation where I kind of want them to play multiple guys. I mean, look, the Rutgers game, they better win regardless of who plays quarterback. But after that, they play at Michigan, at Iowa, versus Indiana. They're probably losing all three of those games, and then I forget the exact order, but after that, there's Northwestern and Maryland, so there are a couple games later on they could win. If they go 2-6 or 1-7, I don't really give a shit. They just gotta look a lot better. They gotta look like they know where they're going.
Well, so, I mean, you know,
I want to see Peyton Thorne because he didn't play at all last year. I mean, Theo Day barely played. Noah Kim's a true freshman. If he's the answer, that's a problem. I'd like to think that somebody who's been there, has been throwing to guys for a year, maybe he can do something. I have no reason to think he's going to be any good. I mean, they stole him from Western and the post-PJ Fleck Western, too. Yeah. So,
well, see, so most of the Big Ten fans I know are not quite as invested in the 2020 college football season as they would have been. Now, I had very high hopes for 2020 before all of this coronavirus thing started. I pinned my hopes and dreams on it. And even I am at this point kind of like, I mean, I'll watch the games, but yeah, I mean, you have got to be pretty much viewing this as a preseason.
Preseason or like an exhibition kind of thing. I mean, don't get me wrong. I understand the games all count. They're still going to go in the, you know, overall series record things, and it'll be three straight losses to Michigan. That's going to be fun.
Well, the fact that nobody's going to get fired, could possibly get fired, does kind of take away some consequences.
Oh, yeah.
Not that anybody would have been fired at MSU regardless, but nobody is getting fired from a Big Ten school this year.
No, and there's only been a couple nationwide, and those have been kind of surprising because, first of all, who can even afford to pay a buyout right now?
Exactly. Exactly. You saw everybody's numbers. I mean, yeah. Why the hell do you think that the presidents want them to be playing football right now?
So there's not a nine-figure red line in the ledger.
Like, exactly.
Yeah. So to get back to your question, I have no idea. I've already seen Rocky Lombardi. Maybe a new staff makes him better, but I'd like to see the guys that I haven't seen and see if they're any good. You can't tell. I mean, most of MSU's better quarterbacks are not guys you would have thought on paper would have been any good. Like, Kirk Cousins was a nothing recruit. Connor Cook was like a low three-star. Like, sometimes these guys turn out to be good. I just want to see, I would love a chance to see all of them. But for this Saturday, I hope they, whoever they go with, is good enough long enough that they win the game. This game, I kind of do want to win. After this, there's no naked lap. I don't want to say you're playing with house money because I would like to win as many games as we can. But who really cares as long as I can see that they're heading in the right direction.
Boy, this is interesting because this Illinois sets up. So you have Greg Schiano, who's 1-1 in Illinois, but has never coached against Lovie Smith, versus Lovie Smith, who's 3-1 in Illinois. So it really sets up that Illinois is a much bigger and more storied thing than it actually is, right? You could definitely display that if you wanted to go in all in on Illinois on your graphics package for when you present this game. Illinois 2020 is going to be lit.
Lit, that's a word for it.
I mean, maybe the game tape will be lit on fire afterwards, who knows?
Boy.
It's going to be a jam that you have to pick out of. I don't know.
I guess we'll see.
Your source for Big Ten Talk, it's Off Tackle Empire.